Today, we take a trip to the Champaign Farmers Market and talk to vendors like Tracy Barkley, who share what it means to say eating local.
There's a lot of additional benefits to shopping the farmers market: education, connection, being part of your community, nutrition. I think their dollar is well spent, and people that come to the farmers market, we often see again and again.
Plus, how is the market working to make produce available to people of all income levels? Here's former SNAP recipient Eric Sarneski.
One of the first times I went to a Whole Foods to use my benefit, the person was like, I've never seen someone come in here to use this benefit before, especially on produce. And it's just, I don't know if people are as familiar with like the avenues that they have access to use these benefits for.
And Jonathan Kappas doesn't have high hopes about action on the farm bill before it expires Sunday.
We're stuck in a stalemate in conference between the House and Senate versions, and the likelihood of getting anything done is, well, fading quickly.
What does that mean for the programs it covers? It's all coming up, our special 21st from the Champaign Farmers Market. Welcome to this special edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. All this week, we're bringing you broadcasts from outside our home studios in Champaign-Urbana. Today, we're coming to you from the Champaign Farmers Market. We recorded this show yesterday evening at the market. Every Tuesday night from May to October, farmers and small business owners from all across central Illinois gather on Main and Neal Street. From handmade soaps to fresh flowers to local produce and food trucks, you can find pretty much everything here from the more than two dozen vendors. When we first started recording yesterday, it started to drizzle, so we ended up indoors looking out onto the market, but that didn't dampen Sarah Simzion's spirit. She's the Farmers Market and Food Access Manager for the Land Connection, the organization behind the Champaign Farmers Market. And we started by asking Sarah to tell us more about the Land Connection and the market.
So the Land Connection is a Champaign-based nonprofit, and we work to grow the local food economy, both on and off the farm. So we do lots of different types of farmer training to help new farmers or farmers looking to transition to more resilient techniques. And we also want to open up opportunities for local farmers and small farms to be able to sell more to their directly to their communities. So we started the Champaign Farmers Market in 2015. We're just about to wrap up our fourth season. And our goal here was to help a lot of new farmers become more visible on the local farm scene, local food scene, and also to really make sure that our whole community could access local food. So we've had different types of SNAP incentive programs from our first season.
And how would you describe the local food scene in terms of local farmers? What does that look like in Champaign-Urbana?
So we're lucky here to have a very strong local food scene. A lot of people who really value being able to eat fresh food in season and support local farms. Of course, in Urbana, we have one of the biggest farmers markets in the state, Urbana's Market at the Square. And there are a lot of, one of the problems though a lot of new farmers have is that they can't really make their market that market. It's so big and dominated by some larger farms that they don't get a lot of notice. So that's why we tried to give them another opportunity and give a midweek opportunity for other farmers who sell at that market to be able to reach the community.
To have two locations then.
Yes.
And so how many local growers and providers do you generally have at the Champaign Farmers Market, Sarah?
So over the course of the season, we'll have about 30 different vendors who sell. It kind of depends on the season. We'll range anywhere from about 12 to about 17 vendors per week. We try to make this primarily for farmers, so at least 60-70% of the vendors that you'll find here are selling fruits, vegetables, or occasionally meat or flowers. And then we have some value-added products like ice cream or coffee or honey or baked goods. But we really try to give preference to food producers who will use local ingredients.
Okay. And we've got some food producers here with us. Sarah, do you actually want to introduce everybody who you brought along with us today?
Sure. So we've got a lot of great farmers, a couple who have been with us from the very start of the market. So Nicole Musumeci from Prosperity Gardens, who was probably involved with this market before I even was in helping get it off the ground. And so Prosperity Gardens is an urban farm in Champaign, just over the other side of the tracks from here, an and I'll let her tell more about the farm. Tracy Barkley from Sola Grazia Farm, who has also been with us from the beginning. She's almost always the first farmer to sign up, and they're located over in Urbana and do a lot of great work tackling food insecurity in the community. And actually, I think this year she was edged out in signing up for the market first by David Wickbolt from Havila Gardens, right? And this is his second season at the market, and he has some both kind of traditional growing methods and aquaponics, so he can tell you more about that. He's our first aquaponics grower at the market, and they're located in Bellflower.
Oh, so thanks, David, Tracy, Nicole. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tracy, I wonder if we could start with you. Can you tell us a little bit more about your farm?
Sure. Our farm is a little unusual in that we are an urban farm. We're in southeast Urbana. We were started by St. Matthew Lutheran Church 7 years ago to tackle food insecurity in our community. We started with 4 acres. Right now we're producing on 12 acres following organic methods. And our mission is to donate at least 10% of everything we grow to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, food pantries, Daily Bread Soup Kitchen. Right now we're averaging about 30%, so about a third of everything we grow is donated. And that's resulted over 7 years to about 62,000 pounds
wow.
of produce
right
now.
And are you primarily doing vegetables?
Annual vegetables, a few fruits, a few perennial vegetables, but annual vegetables are really our mainstay.
And David, what about you? What kind of vegetables are you bringing in from Havila Gardens?
So we have actually a 3.5-acre micro farm, and so we grow seasonal vegetables and small fruit in the outdoor portion, but the kind of the crown jewel of our operation is our aquaponics operation. We have 2,200 square foot under controlled climate in the greenhouse, and those greenhouses produce lettuce, cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, and a few other crops year-round.
So people might not be familiar with aquaponics. Can you explain that whole system? So you're also doing fish farming as well?
We are. Aquaponics is a combination of aquaculture and hydroponics. So our system is a recirculating system that includes the aquaculture component. That water recirculates in through the hydroponic component, which filters the water for the fish, and it goes back and it never leaves the system. It's a zero waste, uses about 95%
less water. So it's a fully contained system.
Fully contained, uses about 95% less water than traditional farming.
Wow, wow. Nicole, can you tell us a little bit about Prosperity Gardens?
That's
a nonprofit organization. Can you tell us what you all do?
Yeah, absolutely. Like Sarah said, we are just around the corner, actually, from the market. We can claim to have the shortest footprint from farm to market here.
You can walk right over.
But we're located on North 1st Street in Champaign, and right now we have 32 raised beds that sit on both sides of the street that we turned into our farm about 7 years ago. These were vacant lots in the northern Champaign neighborhoods, and we came together and got this organization started, and we've been farming those two vacant lots for 7 years now. And Prosperity Gardens, you know, we're dedicated to cultivating a healthy community through several different factors, one being the employment piece. To us, farm work is hard. It's a job. And I think people should have an opportunity to do that work that want to. And we chose to work with youth in our community. So each summer we hire between 5 and 7 high school students. I'm looking at one
of
my favorite
students. Some of your students
are
right
outside
right now.
I'm going to wave to LeBon right now, who's been a fantastic employee at Prosperity Gardens this summer. But I think students get an opportunity to learn a lot of skills through not only learning how to grow the food on the farm, but certainly also the interaction and opportunities they get here through the market. In addition to the Tuesday market, what's not here is our awesome school bus that is on the fritz right now. But in order to achieve some access and affordability options, we created a mobile market program a couple years ago. So on Wednesdays, typically you'd find us out at Francis Nelson. And I have to get a shout out to Tracy and Sola, because they, over the years, have been very generous in donating their produce to our mobile market program. That serves to alleviate access issues for low-income people.
Nicole, the students that you are working with, the young people, what familiarity do they have with farms and growing food?
So I think some kids come to us and grandma has had a farm and uncle has had a farm. I think so, I've had some students even, you know, there's green beans in the backyard. But I've had other students that said, I haven't grown anything in my life, but I want to. I want to learn how to do this and I want to do this work. Over the last couple years, we've seen a bit of a shift in the demographic of our students, and we've had several Congolese high school students that have worked with us. And so some of them are coming from, you know, a very different background on a culinary sense and also, you know, on experiences. And I find that some of them are familiar with the farm, but even some of them have lived in the city, so they're growing for the first time as well.
And when we think about food, Tracy, you also have a CSA, right? And can you explain, some people might not know about CSAs, can you explain how yours works?
Sure. So CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And what that means is that we have members who sign up for a subscription for vegetables, and they sign up at the front end of the season, pay us at the front end of the season, and then they pick up the fresh, recently harvested vegetables from our farm weekly. So for the last 7 years, we've had pickups on Thursday afternoons at our farm. People sign up for either a partial share or a full share, and they come and get a box of vegetables. This year, we added a champagne pickup location, which is here at the market every Tuesday afternoon. We have about 200 families that get vegetables from us each week through the CSA program, and that is part of our model that brings more people into our mission and our outreach and helps them learn more about food insecurity, helps them support our farm and our outreach and education programs as well.
We're going to be talking more about that later in the hour, but David, I wanted to ask you how important farmers markets are for you to be meeting people and meeting people within, meeting maybe potential new customers, introducing what you're doing to other people.
Farmers market really is important. We don't have either budget or personnel to do a whole lot of other marketing and advertising. So this is our main place we get to meet the public and talk about what we're doing and show them and let them participate in at least consuming the food that we're growing. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity for us.
And Tracy, what about you?
This market in particular has been really special to us because the focus has been so much on reaching people that have limited food dollars to spend on fresh fruits and vegetables. I have to give a lot of credit to Land Connection for their match program through SNAP and LINC, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. They do a lot of nutritional programs. They have a sampling tent. They're getting slice of the population out to a farmer's market that we haven't seen at other markets before. And last year, when I ran the numbers, about a quarter of all of our sales went to people that were either using the LINC program or WIC, Women, Infant, and Children coupons.
Sarah, can you tell us about the matching that's offered here at the farmer's market?
Sure. So every week, anyone who has a LINC card who gets SNAP benefits, they can swipe that card in exchange for tokens, and the tokens are good for anything that's LINC eligible, which is almost everything you can find at this market. Basically, it's any foods that aren't prepared for consumption on site. And we have received funding last year from the LINC Up Illinois program, and this year through a FINNY grant, which is the Food Insecurity Nutrition Incentive Program from the USDA. And what we do is every week we will match the amount swiped by a LINC card up to $20. So someone wants to swipe and just take $20 off their account, but they actually get $40 to spend. On the second Tuesday of the month, we offer what we call Triple LINC Tuesday, and so we do an additional match on top of that. So someone who swipes for $20 can actually get $30 to spend. Or someone who doesn't have a lot on their account and wants to swipe for $3 can turn that into $9, which is already really getting into a good chunk of money to spend. We also were fortunate to receive another grant from the Illinois Charitable Trust that has allowed us to do what we're calling our end-of-month bonus, which we're doing today, actually. And so we're doing our regular match like we always do, but we are also adding an additional $10 on top of that, no matter the amount that people swipe. So we have noticed in the past that the end of the month is usually when we don't get a lot of SNAP shoppers. They don't have a lot of money left in their accounts. And so even if someone today wanted to swipe for a dollar, we'll match that dollar, and then we give them 10 to spend. And we've seen a huge increase in the number of people who come on the last Tuesday and actually come to the market. So we're very excited to be able to offer all these programs.
That's Sarah Simsion. She's the Farmers Market and Food Access Manager for the Land Connection that runs the Champaign Farmers Market. And I do think, Tracy, I wonder if I can ask you about this. I think there's a perception that if you're going to a farmers market, you're going to be buying local or organic food, and it's going to be super expensive. So I wonder what you think about that.
Well, when you are shopping at farmers market, you are getting the freshest possible, highest quality produce. It is more expensive on the whole, but I think having programs like the Match program really helps people gain access and have better value. Frankly, like RCSA and some of the specials that are run by vendors here at the market encourage bulk shopping, buying more and getting a better price on your products. There's a high cost to producing food year-round, and David mentioned earlier, labor is a big piece of that, but that's also where shopping at a farmer's market, talking to your farmers about how to use all of that product, you know, the greens of the beets and the root of the beets, knowing how to cook meals, improve your nutritional intake, get tips on how to grow it in your own garden. There's a lot that comes with those dollars that are spent at the farmers market, and you're keeping those dollars local. You're helping employ people in your community. There's a lot of additional benefits to shopping the farmers market: education, connection, being part of your community, nutrition. I think they're dollars well spent, and people that come to the farmers market we often see again and again.
We're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation from the Champaign Farmers Market. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to a special 21st broadcast from the Champaign Farmers Market. We had to move inside because of the weather, but there's still a few folks outside who are playing. We're enjoying hearing some of that music now. My guests are Tracy Barkley with Sola Grazia Farm, Nicole Musumeci, who's the founder and director of Prosperity Gardens. David Wickbold is also with us with Havila Gardens Micro Farm. Sarah Simsion's also with us with the Farmers Market, where she's a food access manager with the Land Connection. They're the group behind the Champaign Farmers Market. Tracy, before the break, you were talking about the food, and we were talking about the true cost of food. And Nicole, I wanted to ask you about this, especially when you're working with students. Do you think there is an awareness, not just among our youngest people in this country, but everyone, about how much food should cost?
Yeah, I think that goes back to some of the hurdles that come with the cost of what we do, of the produce that we create, that we grow for people. And some of the issue being that this automatic thing of the farmer's market not being accessible because the cost of that produce is just out of my budget. And I think, you know, that's a big issue we have to tackle, I think, as a community, as in a nation, of showing that there are these great opportunities to access food that comes at an affordable price, because I think there is some sticker shock that comes with some of the food that comes from the farmer's market. But speaking from a Prosperity Gardens perspective, you know, a nonprofit organization, and we really do, part of our mission is to provide accessible, affordable produce to people. And so not necessarily at this market, but because of our mobile market, that's why we created that program. So it was an opportunity. We actually, that market is run pay what you can and take what you want. Mm. So that's giving folks an opportunity. They can have a quarter, you know, in their pocket, and they can source the produce that they need.
And David, we were also talking about the whole idea over the break. We were just talking about also the freshness factor of what food is like when you get, how fresh it is at a market and how long it lasts.
Yeah, so I was commenting that we get a lot of comments from our regular customers about how long the produce lasts, whereas something that you buy from the store has been on a, you know, for instance, a piece of lettuce that comes from California, Arizona, has been on a truck for a week and at the store for a couple of days before it even gets out on the shelf. So in reality, the cost of buying something locally that's been picked the day before, maybe even that same day, can actually save you money.
And as you all talk about this, I wonder if I could just end by asking all of you, how much you think the idea of healthy, sustainable food, has that changed the way that we talk about that? Do you think our conversation around that has changed over the past few years? Tracy?
Well, I know at Zolograde Farm, we look at sustainability in three ways. One is economic sustainability, one is environmental sustainability, and the third piece is social sustainability. And for us, those are all really important pieces to a community farm that brings people together and really is enriching daily lives and individual and community health. So when I think about sustainability, it's all of these pieces. It's the people working on the farm, it's the consumers, it's the farmers markets, educational piece, and that's something that I think really we have a lot more opportunities to build in this community.
David, what do you think?
I totally agree with what Tracy just mentioned on the three aspects of sustainability, and really to support your local farmer is supporting your entire community, and that's our job. You know, this is how we support our families as well.
Nicole?
Yeah, I mean, I think these guys really covered it. You know, there's all these pieces to what we do and who's behind what we do and how we do it. And I think, as you've seen, and I'm sure Sarah can speak to this, is the number of farmers markets that have increased over time. This opportunity to have this kind of access for people to come, because it goes so much beyond just the food that's on the tables. There's a much deeper, richer story. And I do think over the last 5-10 years, as there's been obesity and a lot of health associated risks, that people are talking about healthy living and how do we support that back to our farms in a way that's sustainable. And I think it's something we all continue to work on.
That's Nicole Musumeci. She's the founder and director of Prosperity Gardens. I want to thank Tracy Barkley as well with Sola Grazia Farm and David Wickbolt with Havila Gardens Micro Farm. All of you, thanks for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
If you're just joining us, we're coming to you from the Champaign Farmers Market here in downtown Champaign. We try to take regular trips outside of the studio and directly into our communities. Today, we're talking to some of the local vendors here at the Champaign Market about their businesses and some of their thoughts as we've been hearing about what it means to be eating local in your community. But in some cases, as we've also been talking about, healthy, local, or sustainable food has a reputation for breaking the bank. To combat this idea, as we've been hearing Sarah talk about, the Champaign Farmers Market has a lot of ways for customers who are on low income or with the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, that's SNAP, how they're maximizing that. So Sarah's with us to talk more about this. We've got a few other folks here as well who we've just swapped out. Eric Zarneski is the market assistant for the Land Connection, a former SNAP recipient. Also joining us is Jim Hires, the president and CEO of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and Caitlin Kanaki. She's an extension educator from the SNAP Ed program at the University of Illinois Extension. Jim, Eric, Caitlin, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Great. Great to be here.
And so as we're talking about this, Sarah, I wanted to just, first of all, we have talked in the past just about the context of the Farm Bill. And the Farm Bill that's looming right now has lots of proposed changes to it. We're going to get into that a little later on in the hour. But first, I just wanted to ask you how the Farm Bill has helped you reach out to different members of people who are SNAP recipients, members of that community, as well as help farmers with marketing.
Yeah, so there's a couple of key programs that were established or continued through the 2014 Farm Bill that have really helped the market, primarily the Farmers Market Promotion Program. And so this is a grant we received 2 years ago, and it helped really beef up our advertising budget, first of all, so that we could reach members of the community. It takes a really long time to get word out that a market exists. We're in our fourth year, and there's still a lot of people who have no idea that we are out here. So that was a big help in helping us reach the community through a lot more channels. It also helped us establish our sampling tent, where we offer cooking demonstrations and tastes of fresh produce so people can get an idea of what they're getting out here and maybe feel a little more adventurous about what they want to buy and cook at home. And then it has also really helped us train farmers on techniques that will help them succeed more at farmers markets. So we did a series of workshops called Mastering the Farmers Market. And just overall, it's really helped us reach more of the community in general, and then specifically low-income shoppers who might not feel like the farmers market is a place they can afford to shop or where they're really very welcome, and really turn this into a welcoming place for the entire community.
To the samples, we're going to get to that. I can smell this delicious sample that is in front of me. But Jim, can I just ask you a little bit first about, as we're talking about the SNAP program, if you can explain a little bit, we've heard so many, I think this has been so much in the headlines about the SNAP program. There's a lot of controversy between what current congressional Republicans are proposing with the bill versus what the Senate version is. We're going to get into some of that. But first, can you just give us a sense of who is receiving and who's enrolled in the SNAP program here in Illinois?
I certainly can. I think that there's a misconception about what SNAP actually is. SNAP is a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's not the Perpetual Nutrition Assistance Program. It's a supplemental. It's designed as a safety net for people. And the average recipient of SNAP or of SNAP benefits is on 6 months or less during a year. And there's only so many times that you can actually be on consecutively. In addition to that, it primarily helps families with older people and children. You know, there are 842,000 children that receive SNAP benefits in the state of Illinois.
Did you say 842,000?
Yes.
So almost a million.
Almost a million. Then elderly and disabled, there are about over 200,000 elderly and disabled who are on receive SNAP benefits. So that program is really designed to help people bridge where they are in their lives. Ironically, it is an unbelievably strong economic stimulus. People don't recognize the fact that it actually provides economic growth. For example, if $3.3 billion were spent on SNAP in 2015, it generated almost $5.6 billion in economic activity.
Across the country.
Across the state of Illinois.
Just for Illinois.
Yes. So that's what happens within communities when SNAP is used. SNAP came about in roughly 1965, 1966, after CBS did a report called Hunger in America. It was called food stamps at that time. And it almost obliterated hunger in a matter of 3 to 5 years.
The program being introduced. Which
is food stamps.
Okay.
So that's the basis of it. I think when someone said that the Farm Bill should be called the Food Bill, well, 80% of the money in the Farm Bill is around nutrition programs. That includes the school lunch program, food for seniors programs, and obviously SNAP.
Eric, I wonder if I can hear a little bit of your story. First of all, what kind of work do you do at the Land Connection now?
I'm the assistant manager for the farmers market. So it's basically, I do a lot of what Sarah's trying to do most of the time, which is make sure these people are out here to have a great time and can get access to wonderful produce. So most days it's setting up tents and talking to people, which is really a fun job.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And then when we're thinking particularly about people who are coming to the farmers market, as we've been hearing Sarah talk about and Tracy telling us as well, how many more people are coming who are using their SNAP benefits, how tough of it is it of a challenge is it to get that word out in the community that if you have SNAP benefits, you can use them at the farmers market?
There's definitely a few challenges. One would be that people have to know the market exists. And 100% of the community is not there yet, and that's kind of the goal, is that everyone knows that this is happening so they can come out and be a part of it. So that's a barrier right there. After that, it's just knowing, I think most people who show up, we have signage everywhere that we accept Link and EBT, all that is abound. But there's, I know one of the first times I went to a Whole Foods to use my benefit, it was, the person was like, I've never seen someone come in here to use this benefit before, especially on produce. And it's just, I don't know if people are as familiar with like the avenues that they have access to use these benefits for, because places like Whole Foods do take them. The farmers market is the best place to use these benefits right now because we give you so much for it.
And Caitlin, you also do work, we've been focusing a lot on SNAP customers and what they're buying, but you do a lot of work with SNAP families and education, and that's part of the food sampling that we've mentioned a couple of times.
Yeah. So a lot of people, I don't think, realize that the Farm Bill contains funding for an entire education program that is specifically for SNAP-eligible adults, children, and families. And so our goal is to work out in the communities with other agencies or community partners who would also be serving those families. We provide nutrition education. We provide food budgeting education. We try to link them to resources in the community. And the other thing that we do is we try to be a connector for agencies in the community to help build healthy environments for SNAP-eligible families to go so that healthy choices can be a lot easier to make.
And speaking of healthy choices, what food did you bring today?
So today, our lovely SNAP Ed staff put together an apple raspberry crisp for everybody to taste. So
I'm going to taste this while you're talking. Okay. Can you? So, and what's the point of having food for people to sample?
So the nice thing about having food for people to sample is that we actually are partnering with the farmers here at the market. We're asking them what they're going to have in season, what's going to be
delicious
at the market each week. And we're planning our recipes around what is going to be most fresh and also what's going to be economical for SNAP families. So we think very carefully about which recipes we pick. And one thing that we did earlier in the season is we focused our sampling on recipes from the National School Lunch Program, and we actually collected feedback from the kids here at the market. And so that's kind of one example of how we fold a partnership at the farmers market and try and take it into the rest of the community.
And you're also doing other research as well. Can you tell us about that?
So this summer, we have partnered with Sola Grazia Farms, and we have partnered our family-based cooking class with the CSA program. And we teach the families in that program all about nutrition. We teach them cooking skills. We teach them food budgeting skills, and then they get to take home produce each week and practice with it throughout the week. So during that class, we also focus a week on where they can use benefits at farmers markets. Where are they physically located? How would they go about using those benefits at the markets?
Jim, before we were about to take a break, but I just wanted to end by asking you one question. As we're really hearing about all of these different programs, all of these different people that are working together, whether they're farmers or educators or nonprofit groups like Prosperity Gardens or the Land Connection, how important is it when we're thinking about food insecurity to have so many different people in a community working on this?
Well, food insecurity is a symptom of a much larger problem, and that is lack of opportunity for a great many of the people who live in the United States. The roughly 40 million people who are food insecure in this country, one out of six children, for example, are food insecure. And so everybody who gets involved is to improve the people's lives. SNAP is just a safety net while people's lives can be improved. If we can provide that opportunity for people, they can move some other dominoes in their life to other kinds of activity. One of my former co-workers had a sign in her office that said, when you have food on the table, you have lots of problems. When there's no food on the table, you only have one problem.
Mm.
So if we can help solve that problem, then you can go out and look for that job. I don't have to spend my time just worrying about where the next meal is coming from.
That's Jim Hires. He's the president and CEO of Eastern Illinois Food Bank. I want to thank Caitlin Kanaki, who works with the SNAP Ed program from U of I's Extension. Eric Zarneski and Sarah Simzion are with the Land Connection. All of you, thank you so much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this special edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and we are broadcasting from the Champaign Farmers Market. If it sounds very hollow, it's because we had to move inside because of the weather. It's cleared up now, so we've got some of our producers out there capturing some of the sounds of the farmers market for you. As we wrap up our conversation, we've been talking about food, and we've mentioned a couple of times that it might be more apt to call the farm bill the food bill. As folks have said, that's because 80% of the bill actually has to do with food. We've been talking about SNAP benefits. The farm bill is typically renewed every 5 years. It's set to expire on September 30th. What is happening with that? We've got a few folks here to talk about that. Madeline Beck is with us. She's a reporter for Harvest Public Media, as well as the Illinois Newsroom, which is a new statewide collaboration. Jonathan Kompis is also with us from the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics at the University of Illinois. Jonathan's also the director of the Gardner Agricultural Policy Program. And Chris Hausman is also here with us. He farms about 1,400 acres of corn and soybean in Pasotum, and we have the weather to thank for you being with us today. Here with us, Chris, Madeline, Jonathan, thanks for being here with me.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Madeline, let's just start first of all with the farm bill. This is a huge bill. This is always a big process. What's going on?
Well, I mean, at this point, it does look like, of course, I say this tentatively, there might be a miracle by the end of the week. We might see it somehow pass, but it doesn't look like it's going to get passed by the deadline of September 30th. That could mean a couple things. Right now, it looks like it's going to mean there's not going to be a stopgap. There's going to be nothing until they come back. There could be a stopgap, and I'll tell you what either of those things mean. But basically, if they don't pass anything and they just wait and come back later in December, which some of the leading senators, Stabenow and Pat Roberts of Kansas, have said, the biggest programs in their crop insurance, SNAP, formerly called food stamps, those will be okay. Those will run on autopilot for the most part. There will be smaller programs that are going to be affected. And those are the programs like conservation programs, grant programs. A lot of those will be put on hold for at least the few months until it gets passed, if it gets passed then. The real concern of a lot of people is that when everybody gets back from elections, if there is a change in the composition of the House or the Senate, the farm bill will also be stalled much longer than a couple months, and we'll see what kind of we saw last farm bill, where it gets going and months and months and months pass, and then things like grants for new farmers, grants for things to help your farmers markets get SNAP recipients, a lot of those will be missed or won't be able to move forward, basically.
Jonathan, this is always, as you or your former work with the USDA, right? You're very familiar with how the Farm Bill works. This year, there's been a lot of contention between a House version of the bill that has to do with worker requirements for SNAP benefits versus a Senate version of the bill. Is that really what's holding things up right now?
Yeah, and Madeline's right. We're stuck in a stalemate in conference between the House and Senate versions, and the likelihood of getting anything done is, well, fading quickly. And so It's a big, like you said, it's a big piece of legislation. They're ironing out a lot of details, but we really come down to probably three major sticking points. The SNAP program, as you've mentioned, some changes in the House Farm Bill in particular about conservation support policy or conservation assistance policy, particularly elimination of one of the big working lands programs called conservation stewardship. And then we have some items that iron out between the two chambers over the commodity support programs, that the farm program payments, that we have some different approaches between the House and Senate that are kind of tough to iron out.
Chris, I mentioned you farm about 1,400 acres of corn and soy in Posotum. How important is the farm bill to you? If the farm bill expires, how will that affect you?
As a producer, we look at the farm bill mainly from its risk management tool, the crop insurance program. The farm program has kind of been redeveloped over the last couple farm bills, and we've done away with a lot of the direct payments going to farmers, which we never, as a producer, we were never in favor of having direct income coming and support that mechanism. What we want to focus on is having an affordable crop insurance to help us manage risk. And that's where we as producers really fall on, is wanting to have that secured crop insurance program in place.
And I wonder, with all of the conversation around the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, is that frustrating to you? Do you have an opinion about how that should play out?
Well, we understand that it has to be part of it, mainly because when you look at a farm bill, a lot of the urban legislators have no tie to agriculture, but they do have ties with the SNAP program, with their constituents. So we feel in the ag community it's important to keep those two together, because it keeps people focused on food security in this nation.
And Jonathan, is that the origin of how those ended up together in the Farm Bill?
Yeah, they really came together in the mid-60s, as we had some fights over farm programs, and then some changing demographics in Congress. And so as you saw, those particular House districts, we had fewer and fewer of them that were representing rural and agricultural districts. You look beyond, or Congress had to look beyond, sort of the more traditional farm group interests. And, you know, to add to what Chris said, it provides assistance to people who are eating, and that is ultimately the end product of farming, and it's certainly a value that we see both politically and for the consumer across the board.
Madeline, when you're thinking about, I'm thinking about farmers across the Midwest that you've been talking to with Harvest Public Media, as Chris mentioned, the whole idea of crop insurance, do you think for most of the producers you're talking to, that's the most important part of this?
I mean, it's definitely a major part, but you can't put everyone in one hole. There's some people that rely heavily on the conservation programs, and there's others that rely on different grants to get their product out. There's value-added grants, so producers who might create grain, if they turn that into bread, there's grants to incentivize people to do that, add value to themselves, add value to their community by creating more jobs, things like that. So yeah, I mean, crop insurance is definitely the top of, if I were to have a group of hundreds of farmers, that's going to be the top one. But under that, you're going to see several of those other titles, including trade, which some trade programs also, if the farm bill lapses, there are a few trade programs that will be affected. They won't get funding, they won't move forward, but that also might be evened out by the recent incentives that are going out to farmers, the $4.7 billion package
that the Trump administration announced recently. Jonathan, when we're thinking about trade in particular, I saw you nodding there. What do people need to understand about the Farm Bill and when it comes to trade, particularly if it were to expire?
Well, that's a very good point. What we have in the Farm Bill are what we call market development and market access programs. So these are actually fairly significant investments every year into developing and getting access into foreign markets for American farm products. And those do expire on September 30th and are at risk of a break in funding, which could really, you know, you're talking about, you have contracts with various groups to try and do this. And so you could have some pretty rough situations on that, which, as you have mentioned, sort of adds another layer of challenges in the export trade environment for American farmers because of what's happened with the tariff conflict between the administration and particularly China.
Chris, how much do these international affairs affect what you're doing on a day-to-day basis?
not so much on a day-to-day basis, but over
all season.
The profitability, it's a huge issue. And, you know, we raise corn and soybeans. I would say the majority, especially in the soybeans, is exported, and it is critical for us to have open trade between all of our trading partners. So it's critical, and as we've seen this year with the trade issue with China, the soybean market has lost about $1.50 a bushel, and that hits our bottom line. And so trade is vital to Midwestern agriculture.
I've heard so many of people within the ag sector, particularly in the farming community, talk about how difficult the uncertainty has been this year. Do you have a sense that you feel like the uncertainty or the up and down is maybe in the long run? Are you hoping that this is worth it?
Well, I don't think any producer really had this on the radar screens early on. It kind of caught us off guard a little bit. We had good pricing opportunities early in this year, and as a producer, we try to market our crops. We try to come up with a marketing plan, and the market was offering us good prices early in this growing season. Unfortunately, when the trade issue became heated, that's when things went south. And so for farmers that have not sold much of this crop yet, it's going to hit their bottom line very serious.
And when we're thinking about the fact that compounding, this is obviously already a busy time for you. So again, we have the weather to thank for you being here with us today, because I know otherwise you'd be pretty busy. We have all of the uncertainty that we've been talking about regarding trade and pricing. Now the farm bill expiring on top of that. Do you feel like there's just a lot that American farmers are dealing with right now, or is this par for the course?
It is par for the course. Farmers in general, we have a lot thrown at us, and sometimes they're out of our control. And we're hoping the administration can get this trade issue worked out. We hope Congress can come to terms, as Jonathan and Madeline have talked about, with the farm bill, because we don't like uncertainty. And going back to the crop insurance, it's all about risk management, and it's one of those things that we can sleep at night when Mother Nature doesn't send us rain in the summertime and our crops are deteriorating, and that program is critical. So it's all about risk management for farmers.
Jonathan, when we're thinking about agriculture and our economy and consumer economics, how important is this farm bill to Illinois' economy?
Well, I think, again, it's important in that agriculture is an incredibly important part of the Illinois economy. And you think about, we focus a lot on the direct, on the payments and the crop insurance with farmers. But, you know, as Chris talks about, that risk management, right, that's going to impact how you deal with your banker. That's going to impact how you deal with your input supplier, your equipment manufacturer, a little company called John Deere, and things like that, right, that have impacts across the state. And so you sort of add in layers of risk or uncertainty, it's going to kind of ripple back through. And we've seen that over time as well, that it can add challenges outside of the farm gate. And that raises concerns that I think hit everybody, not just, you know, those that are watching the rain.
Chris, I wonder, as we're here at the Champaign Farmers Market, as we started this hour talking about people who like to shop at farmers markets, people who are interested in local and sustainable food, for that person who's listening, who maybe isn't as familiar with agriculture or the agriculture economy that we've been talking about, what do you think is important for them to know about the farm bill and farming?
Well, I think it's important for the general consumer to understand that agriculture is much more than a farmer's market. It is a global, we raise commodities, corn and soybeans, which we produce about 14.5 billion bushels of corn and about 4.5 billion bushels of soybeans in this country. And so it is a big business, and when you think about all the livestock that need to be fed, the ethanol plants that grind the corn for ethanol production, the trade, the exporting of this crop, it is a big, big business. And so we have a lot of acres here that are suited to produce corn and soybeans here in the Midwest. And we utilize what Mother Nature has given us in these fertile lands, and I hope the general consensus out there is that we are going to continue to to feed the world, and we're going to do that with commercial agriculture.
I want to thank all of you for being with me. Chris Hausman is a corn and soybean farmer in Posotum. Jonathan Coppice is with the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Economics at the U of I. Madeline Beck will continue to be following this if you tune into your public radio station for Harvest Public Media and the Illinois Newsroom as we look at this farm bill expiration coming up. All of you, thanks for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That does it for us today with our broadcast from the Champaign Farmers Market. If you have the NPR One app, by the way, you can download that forever. You get your smartphone apps, and you can always find past shows there. If you follow us on Twitter, our handle is 21STShow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background. Today, we've got lots of pictures of the farmers market. Special thanks to Sarah Simzion from the Land Connection for helping us do today's program. I also want to thank Jason Croft for all of his engineering support for today. Steve Mork back at WILL as well. We're produced by Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio. Vishesh Anand is our intern, and Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. See you back here tomorrow. By the way, if you are in the Champaign-Urbana area, we will be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning doing the show live from the Pygmalion Festival.